With CarGurus Discover, you can skip the filters and describe what you're looking for in your own words. Simply type what you want, and CarGurus Discover instantly surfaces real listings that match your exact needs. It's no wonder CarGurus is the number one most visited car shopping site, according to SimilarWeb's estimated traffic data. Buy or sell your next car today with CarGurus at CarGurus.com. Go to CarGurus.com to make sure your big deal is the best deal. That's CarGurus.com. CarGurus.com.
What if this isn't a climate crisis, but the greatest opportunity humanity has had in a long time? Lean Into Clean will explore and discuss with highly esteemed guests on what could be the new spirals for society, sustainability, spirituality, and social harmony. Perhaps we've all lost our way. Lean Into Clean will showcase how we might remember, refocus and restore the natural ways so we can again live in balance and harmony with life on Earth and all its inhabitants. Welcome to this week's Lean Into Clean, everybody. You're on UK Health Radio. I'm Jarvis Smith. How is everybody? Have you broken those New Year's resolutions yet? Happy New Year to those of you that I haven't caught up with yet. I hope you're having a good start to the new year. I tell you what, it was a bit slow for me. I had such a lovely time over Christmas, just chilling and hanging out with family. It took me a while to get back on the treadmill, but here I am. As always, we're going to have an amazing guest today. He's actually been a dear friend of mine. He's run some amazing businesses. So I'm really looking forward to having a chat with him. But before we do that, as always, there's always a news article that I read up on mygreenpod.com. Katie's been quietly writing away and getting these news stories up online. So if you really care about the planet, sustainability, and want to be a solution, do go to mygreenpod.com. But this article really caught my attention, and it kind of links to today's guest in a few ways. So you'll recognize that when we introduce him and bring him onto the show. But this is a story that went up on the 9th of January, so only a couple of days ago. The headline is Recognizing Natural Capital. Now, what does natural capital mean? Essentially, it's the value of nature. So, as you all know, everything that we possibly eat, drink, wear, go to work in, use mobile phones, computers, you know, materials, products, energy, the whole thing, it all comes from nature, everything. And so we've taken, and we haven't actually been giving back to nature. So this is why we're in this thing that everyone's calling a climate crisis. So natural capital, let me read this out to you, because then you'll get a bit more of an understanding. So it says here, natural capital should be formally recognised as critical national infrastructure to strengthen the UK's economic resilience, drive sustainable growth, and meet its environmental goals. Now, this is according to a new policy paper by the Institute of Sustainability and Environmental Professionals. It's the ISEP. Now, the reason I'm flagging this story as our kind of first major story of the year is because each and every one of us needs to remember that when we brush our teeth or eat some toast or drive our car or turn on the heating or go to work or whatever we do, we are constantly using nature's resources. I think at the very least, it would be honourable of us to just give gratitude and appreciation to nature, a little bit like those indigenous communities that are stewards of about 85% of the world's biodiversity. They often will give a little prayer or a little bit of appreciation or gratitude before they take a sip or eat some food or etc. So I think it'd be really healthy of us to rebuild this kind of energy of gratitude back into our daily habits. So anyway, I digress. I'm going to go on. The new report, natural capital is a critical infrastructure. I've read that bit out. So that's important. Now, why is it a critical one? Because it demonstrates that the loss of degradation of natural capital could significantly impact essential services. Of course, we've seen that. Economic stability. We saw that during, various floods and weather patterns, this thing that hit Cornwall, it obviously has a huge impact on the local economy and possibly the wider economy. And obviously, national security, which is a really big one. So it goes on to say natural capital refers to the world's stocks of natural assets. And these are including things like forests, fisheries, rivers, biodiversity, land and minerals. Both the living and non-living, and these assets provide essential ecosystem services. The benefits humans derive from nature, such as I've said, food, water, climate regulation, which are crucial for the economy and the well and human well-being, right? So not well-being of us now, but also well-being of our future generations, which of course we care about, right? So natural capital loss impacts economic resilience, operational costs, and critical resources. The Office for National Statistics values the UK ecosystem services, check this, at 1.8 trillion or 72% of GDP. Now, the Green Finance Institute estimates environmental deterioration could lead to a 6 to 12% GDP loss by the 2030s. That's just around the corner. And for context, the 2008 financial crisis reduced GDP by 5%, which we will all remember, while COVID-19, it cost the GDP 11% in 2020, which we're all still slightly recovering from. Now, Natural England's State of Natural Capital report says environmental degradation threatens industrial productivity and resilience to climate change and economic shock. So investing in nature-based solutions, and this is really important, can drive economic growth, create jobs, and generate significant social welfare benefits. For example, £3 of welfare from every £1 invested. So we're getting a 3-to-1 ratio if we invest at £1 into nature, which is amazing. Now, I'm just going to read this last bit out, which is a quote that came from Sarah Mukherjee. She's an MBE and she's the CEO of the ISEP. And she says this, I think it's really important. She says, "There is a crucial relationship between the UK's economic growth agenda and natural capital, of course. Despite growing evidence demonstrating that nature and biodiversity loss pose significant risks to society and the economy, and that investment in nature restoration can generate jobs and economic output, there remains a shortfall in policy integration. There are 13 sectors that currently fall under the category of critical national infrastructure, and these are food, water, energy, health, transport, and communications. And while not a sector in its own right, natural capital directly underpins the functioning and resilience of each of the other existing sectors. So it's like it's the embodiment of everything." So she says this, and I think this is important: "To future-proof the economy and provide resilience against the increasing impacts of climate change, natural capital should be recognized as critical infrastructure and integrated more effectively into the UK economy and fiscal policies. This will align with the scientific advice, rather, with current forecasts predicting that nature-related risks, unless addressed and properly integrated into decision-making, will negate any of the potential gains in the economic growth that the government is striving to deliver." So let me just repeat that last line again. If we are expecting growth in the economy, that unless we take natural capital into consideration, it will negate, i.e., write off any of the potential gains in the economic growth system. So that is pretty shocking, but also important for us to just remember the importance of nature and how significantly, without it, we wouldn't possibly be able to live in this, well, kind of crazy way that we do right now. So I think about when you're buying stuff, do you need it? Do you need to buy it new? Can you buy it from the sharing economy? There's loads of amazing platforms out there now, the eBays and the others. I can't remember the others, but there's loads of them. And when you need to buy something, get it secondhand or repurposed or fixed or anyway. So that's my little shout for the day. I think that if you can think about this week, make it be, something that you literally add into your kind of weekly practices of just giving thanks to nature for everything that you're doing. I tell you what, if you go out and walk in the trees and sit on the ground and give thanks to nature, then it actually scientifically been proved that nature responds a bit like when you talk to plants and they grow better. So there we are. That would be my advice for this week. But let's get into today's guest. I'm really, as I say, really, really excited about having Luke Hazell on the show. Now, just let me tell you this. Imagine a music festival where the food hasn't traveled halfway around the world, the fields are still being farmed, and the whole thing feels more like a big, joyful gathering than a weekend escape from reality. That's Valley Fest, and the man behind it is my guest today. So I'm joined by Luke Hazell. He's an organic farmer, founder of the Story Farms, and proof that farming, culture, music, and community don't have to live in separate worlds. Luke has taken a working organic farm and turned it into a place where people come together for incredible food, great music, well-being, and a genuine connection to the land that we all come from, right? And without losing sight of what really matters, which of course is important. So today we're talking about how festivals can reconnect us to nature, why food tastes better when we know where it comes from, and how farming might just be one of the most creative jobs there is. Luke, welcome to the show. It's great to have you with us.
Good afternoon. Thanks, Jarvis.
Not at all, mate. It's lovely to see you. Now, tell me, Luke, you grew up on a farm, and eventually, you took over your family's land to run it organically. I'm not sure if it was organic before or not, but you certainly do now. Can you share what your journey growing up on the farm was like and how that shaped your approach to farming today?
Yeah, sure. Well, I was born here at Heron's Green Farm, which is in the southwest of the UK near Bristol. I've kind of when I was thrown into the mix of having to look after the farm, I suppose I had nurtured and I'd been brought up on the farm. You learn skills and you don't even realize you've learned, I suppose, is and my the it goes back several generations in the Chew Valley. We are very lucky to sit on the edge of a 1,000-acre lake called Chew Valley Lake. And before it was flooded, my grandparents, my great grandfather farmed the majority of the lake. And so therefore we go back about five generations in this valley. And
Wow.
I'm very proud to still be farming a very small part of this world. And yeah, I was thrust into the limelight of the farming world in 2003, when sadly my father passed away. I was at that time, I was a civil engineer working in London for Kier Group, and ironically building
Were
supermarkets. So I built one of the biggest supermarket distribution centers on the M25. I then went on to do several Tesco, several Sainsbury's, several Waitrose's, and then suddenly back running a family farm. And at the time, we were selling our produce to those supermarkets for below the cost of production. And I flipped that on his head, if you like.
Good for you. So, I mean, what was it organic land back in the day? I mean, I guess all farmers generations ago, everything was organic, wasn't it? Before the kind of, the modern farming ways came in.
My great grandfather, before the lake was flooded, would have been organic by default. But my grandfather actually was introduced to chemical fertilizers just after the war, and then sort of moved with those times and tried to produce as much food as he possibly could. With ironically applying as many fertilizers as he could onto that land, which ironically probably destroyed the very habitats in which the lake was built on, and the water, ironically, the water that was being supplied to the nearest cities would ultimately suffer in the long term because of that. And so when I was in 2003 and four, I had some very important questions to ask myself. And I had an agronomist that would come around to the farm and tell me what to apply the land, because my father had already planted the crops in the autumn of his passing. So I was immediately, I knew. I opened up this locked container of a spray shed, and as I unlocked the door, and I was hit with the amount of chemicals in that shed that was there. And the bloke was like, "Right, yeah, well, they go on in this time. That next one will be applied in April." And I was like, "Well, but why? Why do we need to do this?" And he couldn't really answer my questions.
Yeah, because just the way we do it. What do you mean, why? It's how it's done.
So
Good for you.
I didn't apply any of those that year. And we then applied to the Soil Association to do a simultaneous conversion of the land, and we did that over a number of years, and until the whole plot of land was converted to organic status.
Amazing.
And we've seen dramatic change over the last 20 years since we've been farming in this way. And farming with nature is definitely the way in which I hope slowly we can inspire more and more people and more pieces of land that can be converted to farming with nature, regeneratively, organically, or however we wish to put a name on these things. I think that's part of the problem, is there's so much confusion over how farmland is managed. But we're trying to tell that story, and we do that through very many different mediums.
Well, let's talk about that story, because one of your projects is called the Story Farms, right? I mean, is that what the farm is that what the farms is that Heron's Farm? Is that how you relate to it now?
We set up the story in a way of demonstrating to people how we can heal the planet through my simple way of farming, and that being organic at the time. And I suppose now I use the I'm an organic regenerative farmer as well, because we're part of the Greener World Association, which is now spreading its wings across the globe, and we're passed as a regenerative farm. So we heal both people and planet through our methods of farming, albeit I feel like I always hate to I've only got 350, well, 400 odd acres to manage in this way, so I almost feel like I'm a fraud in you like in a small way in which we are doing it. But equally, I through the festival and through the story, we're communicating our message, even though we're only farming in a very small way.
And I think, you know what? I mean, don't be hard on yourself, because I get it, but the beauty of what you do is you include, community is such an important word for you. And I've been very, very much a part of that community, even just, coming down. I remember the first time we headed down to your place. We were coming to see the founders of Yeo Valley, because we had a meeting with them, and we were staying down, and they said, "Oh, well, there's a little festival on down the road. Do you want to come?" And we came, and we met you, and we had a lovely time, and then we all got invested in not emotionally invested into your festival, which is now, 11 years down the road, I think, since that date. Let's talk a little bit about, so you founded, or certainly co-founded, Valley Fest on the organic farm, on the regenerative farmland. Why did you decide to start a festival? And how does that tie into your broader mission around land? Because I know you've touched upon it, but land, food, and community. Just tell us why the festival.
I suppose like from the beginning in 2003 and 4, I've been left this land. I didn't ask for it. I have a responsibility to look after it. I could have done the easy option and sold it all and emigrated to Australia, which is what I was about to do in
Yeah, I
2003,
bet that crossed your mind.
but I didn't, and I knew that I felt this responsibility to the planet. And to my parents, because both of their passing has meant that I have this overarching feeling that I need to share this land, and that's what we've done from the beginning. In 2008, I co-founded a community farm, which is a community interest company, and we've set aside 15 acres of the land that has been left behind to the community. And we run, we have over 700 shareholders of that community that are invested in the land. They have vegetables delivered to their door every week. And they've become, they use the land as a sanctuary. Some people come out every day, every week. We have volunteers that have been coming for the last 12 years. And we're very proud of that. And so sharing that land and building that community is the main thing, really. But putting on an event, putting on a festival is it's a really stupid thing to go and do. But the reasons are more deeply rooted than that. And it was about sharing the harvest and educating people about food, getting people on the land, telling the stories that we have, introducing them to what organic means, and that's really the heart of it is sharing and building that community of people.
Yeah, lovely. We're going to talk about the festival because obviously it's coming up this year. But I'm sorry to say this, we're just going to very quickly go to commercial break and we'll be back just in a few moments. Don't go away. We'll be back with Luke soon.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
With Car Guru's Discover, you can skip the filters and describe what you're looking for in your own words. Simply type what you want, and Car Guru's Discover instantly surfaces real listings that match your exact needs. It's no wonder Car Guru's is the number one most visited car shopping site, according to SimilarWeb's estimated traffic data. Buy or sell your next car today with Car Guru's at cargurus.com. Go to cargurus.com to make sure your big deal is the best deal. That's cargurus.com. Cargurus.com.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back. If you just tuned in, I'm here with Luke Hazel, who's a phenomenal guy, an organic farmer, regenerative farmer. Really impactful in his community and beyond. We're just talking about this amazing festival called Valley Fest, which my family and I have been going to. In fact, I remember my daughter, who's now 9, my wife was pregnant with her when we came to the second year of the festival. So we've been going for 10 years. Let's talk about Valley Fest, Luke. So I mean, look, Valley Fest, it blends music, it's food, it's well-being, it's connection to the land. But, you know, how do you see festivals like this helping to shift people's mindsets, and particularly about where their food comes from? Because I know that's a really, really big theme for you. Just tell me about the vision. Like when you started that festival and you wanted people to come to the land, which I get, you wanted it to be a community, which I get. I mean, the farming community, I live in a farming community, and it's a really strong, beautiful community. You have to be, because, when it snows, or, you know, when a delivery truck gets stuck on your drive because it's ice, you know, one of the farmers comes and pulls them out. You know, you really do help each other. It's one of those, like, I really appreciate it. But tell me how it is for you.
Well, you know, Valley Fest is, a decade on. It's been a journey. It's exciting to put on, but it's also a very risky thing to do from an event organizer's position. But ultimately, the first one was about harvest, and we did it in the first weekend of September. We've fiddled around with the dates a little bit, but the point of the festival is to raise the awareness and the connection between people's well-being and planetary health and food and how it's produced, and the food system is integral to all of our lives. So, you know, for us, it's easy to explain how it's produced organically and have a walk around the farm, but actually raising the awareness of 10,000 people's thought processes about regenerative organic farming is not easy in the mix of them having a good time and there to listen to music. And so it's actually a really difficult job to try and do. And it's something that we, we continue on. We are very passionate about having a regeneration zone. And so people leave our festival, hopefully enlightened about how they can change their lifestyles or eat differently or do something, a little hack to improve their health. Or, you know, it can be quite simple. There's some really simple things that that people can do to improve their well-being, and not just personally, but also the planet's as well. So, and so at the heart of it, that's what I'm so passionate about.
Yeah.
It's a shame it costs so much money to do that and put on a good party at the same time.
It's a risky business, isn't it? It's a risky business. It really is, because you're constantly, I mean, I know I've been with you very much on this journey, not certainly at the stress levels that you have, because thankfully I'm not part of the bottom line of it. I'm just there to support you. But What are some of the highlights from that? I remember the Clean Bandits. Is it Clean Bandits, that band? They played one year and they were absolutely awesome. And then you've had like some epic cover bands like the ABBA covers and various other things. But what have been some of your highlights? Because you always get up on stage. I've even joined you up on stage on that main stage at some points. You DJ, you do all kinds of stuff. So tell us some of the highlights of the festivals over the years.
I do remember that ABBA one. That was a tricky situation because Sophie Ellis-Bextor decided that she couldn't turn up.
Oh, but is that what it was?
She gave
she had
us
COVID,
less than
didn't she, or something?
24 hours notice, and she couldn't turn up. So we were stuck in the middle of a field trying to ring various different agents to see who would like quickly get in their car and drive down the motorway to help us out. And so that was that was the ABBA tribute band on the Sunday afternoon.
That was that year. I'd forgotten that Sophie Ellis-Bextor.
They were amazing, though, weren't they?
They
went off. Yeah, it was good. But yeah, the highlights. I mean, every year has a highlight, and every year it's fashionable to say it. Every year gets better and better, and it actually does.
It does.
But every year certainly does have a highlight, and I go back to like the beginnings of just that one teepee in the corner of the field. And we had some great bands, Cut Capers, and we've had some really amazing Bristol acts that have started off and grown with us over the years. But yeah, the headliners, this year is an interesting mix because we're trying to reintroduce the festival, but not for it not to be about all the big glossy headliners, and trying to real build a grassroots music scene. So it'll be interesting when we launch the music this year.
Oh, that's nice though. That's nice. If you can tap into those, you know, I guess smaller groups that have an identity and they're building a fan base.
Yeah.
Their fan bases will hopefully come and support them. I quite like that. I quite like that angle.
Well, I would like to, we'd like to reinvent that festival and so that, but it's not quite there yet. I'd love for the fact that an artist could get paid on how many tickets they actually sell for the festival.
Yes.
That would be a good concept.
Yeah, wouldn't it? Rather than just taking the big money and then nothing.
But interestingly, you said about my passion for the festival. This year, we are thinking of trying to reinvent the festival. I'm trying to use the tagline as our festival is a truly regenerative festival. And what does that mean? What does that mean for the future? And what does that mean for us as a festival organizer going forward?
Yeah.
And for me, I'd really want to launch a, I have this mad idea of launching some sort of membership scheme or membership idea that where people come along the journey with us and regenerate land across the UK, so they could take part in projects of regeneration. But at the end of that day or weekend, we have a celebration of that land, and we have some music, and we have a fire, and we sit around the fire, and we celebrate what we've just done and achieved through the word regeneration. And I think that could be a really inspiring thing to try and launch.
Yeah, I love that. So essentially what you're saying is people would become a member. So you'd contribute to, whatever it might be, you know, some allotment land, some growing, you know, part of the festival, whatever it might be. And then you come and be a part of that community and celebrate the, I guess the kind of, excuse the term, but the kind of organic growth model that you kind of put behind that. So And yeah, I love that, because a lot of people don't have access to land, certainly their own land, you know, just allotments and stuff like that. Growing your own stuff is just really tricky, isn't it?
And there could be loads of interesting projects across the UK that, you know, landowners need help to plant trees. They need help to create a pond or regenerate land in a positive way for both people and planet. It's like, it could be really exciting. So we're in the discussions of how we could do this and introduce this to the festival scene.
Yeah, nice. I love it. For anyone out there that's listening, if you want to check out Valley Fest, if you're feeling like you're feeling drawn to go to the most amazing family-friendly festival. I mean, as I say, we've been every year since my daughter was, God, she's 18 now. She's 18 next week. And she's been coming, and she's gone right through the ages for the last 10 years. And, you know, the last couple of times we've taken her, she's just gone off. I haven't seen her all weekend. We brought her with us, and then we didn't see her again till we left. It's like kind of that kind of moment. But it is amazing festival. So go and check out valleyfest.co.uk. Very simply, valleyfest.co.uk. You've got some good deals on tickets at the moment. I think you're all sold out of your early bird tickets, aren't you, already?
Yeah, we are, yeah.
So it's the next phase of tickets. But I can absolutely promise you, hand on heart, if you want a festival this year and you want good food, good music, great people, this is the one to go to. And it's down near Bristol, Chew Valley. So it's not far. It's about half an hour from Bristol, isn't it, if I remember rightly?
Yeah, 20 minutes, yeah.
20 minutes. Luke, let's play one of your songs, because, you know, whenever I have a guest on, I always say to them, you know, give us a couple of songs that are soundtracks to your life's work. It's always a tricky thing to do. I mean, if somebody really asks me for my favourite song, I'm like, it has to be a top 10. I can't give you one. It's one for different moods. But you've come up with two. We're going to play the first one. It's a classic, U2, With or Without You. And we'll play that, Luke. Everyone can have a little dance and a sing-song, have a Bono sing-song along. And then you can tell me why you chose that song at the end, yeah? So I hope you all enjoy this as much as we do. Have a little loosen yourselves up on this Monday grey morning. Absolute classic. Couldn't help having a sing-along there. Luke, why did you choose that song in relation to what you do today, how you show up in the world?
I suppose it was one of the first bands that back in the day when you used to have like vinyl, and my mum had a big collection, I joined one of those send in the post vinyl collectors. So I started collecting U2 albums from the beginning, and then it wasn't till the Joshua Tree that I was blown away by the entire album. But like, you always used to listen from start to finish. Nowadays you tend not to, but yeah, that album blew me away. And I suppose it was at a time of my life when I was like 15 and I was almost semi-questioning spirituality. And at the time, I didn't think Bono was shying away from the fact that he was writing a lot of songs linked to God and linked, you know.
Yeah.
He's tried to sort of steer away from it a bit since. But back in those days, a lot of those songs had a deep spirituality about them. And I guess I was searching back then as well, and not really knowing and trying to find out more. And that album, Joshua Tree, was one that's close to my heart. And so, and With or Without You is a absolute classic. So, it's defined.
Yeah, no, I love it.
I wouldn't say it's defined me, but you know, my son's called Joshua. Don't worry.
it's pretty much influenced certain parts of your life for sure. I'd like to dig a bit deeper on that spiritual path, because I think, you know, many of our listeners will absolutely resonate to that part in your life where you're feeling a bit disconnected and a bit lost, and then suddenly you find, not necessarily religion, because I don't think spiritual is always linked to religion, but let's find out a bit more about that for you and what that means to you. We're going to go to a second commercial break. Don't go away. We'll come back and we'll just hear about Luke's journey on that spiritual path.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
Ah, great. So, Luke, we're just you just said something about, you know, playing U2 and, you know, really connecting with that, the spiritual part of existence. Tell me, what does that mean to you, that kind of spiritual path, and how does it help you make decisions in your life today?
Yeah, I mean, I think everyone has a journey and a pathway through life, and everyone has these questions to answer by the time they leave this planet. And as a farmer, I think I've grown up with nature, and I feel like in tuned with that, and I feel a sort of, you know, spiritually, I believe that there is a God out there. And I, you know, when I go walking, me and my mum used to hug trees. So spiritually, I get a good affiliation with trees, nature.
Yeah.
And I think nature itself embodies truth. And for this reason, I think it's extremely important to have nature as your guide, if you like. We're there. We are soil. We return to the soil. And I think that's another reason why it's very important. And as a farmer, and as I want to be a good advocate for what I stand for as a farmer, and looking after that soil and looking after nature, and being having that spiritual element to it. 10 years ago, I would have said, what are you on about? I'm going to be in the middle of a field, cross-legged underneath an oak tree, being grateful for what I've got in front of me. It sounds very woolly and mad, but I do that now. My well-being journey. My well-being journey is taking me on it's really interesting how the last decade I've been thinking a lot more deeply about what it all means. And been looking after myself in a much different way than I did in my 20s, you know. So, and maybe that's just midlife crisis age.
No,
I don't know.
You know what? I don't think it is. I think that, you know, as the world gets madder, more and more people are looking for that reconnection, and I think that's the spiritual path. So, no, I love it, and I know it's not an easy thing to talk about, but I think everybody listening will be able to really relate to what you've said. So, thank you for that. And I think it's interesting as well, because I know you and I have been talking about Valley Fest, and I've had a lot of ambassadors on the radio show. You know, different people, the yogis and Lama Tashi, who's a Buddhist, who was very close to the Dalai Lama, and various others. And you know, you are going to bring some of that, I guess, kind of raising consciousness, you know, indigenous music, indigenous local communities, and maybe international indigenous people to the festival this year. And I think that's what people are partly looking for in their lives, is to remember that indigenous culture that we all have in us. You know, I mean, you know, before the world got all political and religious and bureaucratic and, you know, big business and all of that, we did live with the land. We understood it. We understood the connection. We understood she was a breathing, living, conscious being that provided everything that we needed to survive, and we've kind of lost touch with that. So no, I really, really admire you for that. Just tell us a little bit about the festival. We've got like kind of 10 minutes left on the show, so tell us what people can expect this year. Tell us about the regenerative part, and why that's so important to you, and anything else that we don't know about it, so people can just come off this radio show and go and book their tickets.
Well, one journalist left Valleyfest about 6 years ago and taglined it as the best tasting music festival in the UK. So
nice.
I'll take that one. But yeah. But this year, even more so than others, we are putting regeneration on the map. So one of the taglines for me this year is "We are the regeneration," and we're launching with real purpose and intent, with a symposium style gathering of people, thought leaders, businesses, general public that want to attend, with an event called Wake the Valley. And that hopefully will translate across the next 3 days of entertainment, where we'll have a lot of interaction, immersive actors that are going to be walking around the festival with regeneration at their mind, in their actually, I'm going to call them the regenerators. So there, mm-hmm. there's some are being costumes, some are being theatre, some are being general Joe public, that making sure people are having a great time. But yeah. We've got theatre groups coming to have this regeneration theme running right through the whole festival. And I want people to leave. I don't want to ram it down people's throats, but, you know, I want them to leave having experienced something in a fun way, interactive way, and also have an amazing time at the same time. So hopefully they'll leave feeling that they've become a bit more aware about how food is produced, a bit how the planet is, how we're heading, what trajectory we can, and how we can change the way in which we're heading, because there's so many important questions out there, and how we heal the planet, yeah. And how we can all do our little thing, in not just our personal well-being journeys, but if we can take a little bit away from each event and each day, and change our habits or change our ways, like you alluded to at the beginning of this podcast, I think that's all positive for the future.
Yeah, brilliant, brilliant. And I know you and I have talked about, you know, bringing Om in and what we do at Om, which is really connecting with those, you know, those things that do help us to raise consciousness. So, for example, we've been talking to some abuelos from South America, which are the wisdom keepers that run these, you know, universities about Earth and Mother Nature and kind of indigenous cultures and practices. And they've talked about coming and doing some sessions in your regenerative, you know, symposium, and staying at the festival and offering music and ritual and all of that. So I think it's going to be epic. I really love the fact that you've transformed it into this kind of, you know, regenerative festival opportunity. I'm really, really excited about it.
I've just come back from 2 days at the Oxford Real Farming Conference, and it's left us all very inspired and invigorated about the future, because there is a lot to be positive about. And I think it's quite possibly one of the most exciting times to be on planet Earth. We, even though with all the doom and gloom, there is so much that is exciting about the future. And it's a great time to be alive.
I agree. I think it's. I mean, I'm sure, you know, probably every generation said this, but I do believe we are on the precipice of something amazing right now with all the technology, the AI. I think as that gets kind of, you know, more crazy, people are going to want what's natural to them, and that's reconnecting with the land and doing what's right for communities. So look, just looking at that, we've got literally about 5 minutes before we have to just play the end song and come out of the show. But so looking ahead, Luke, what's your vision for, you know, for the Story Farms or for Valley Fest over the next 5 years? You're starting something new this year. What do you see in 5 years' time in terms of, you know, building communities? And also, are there any other projects or ideas that you're particularly excited about? Because I know you're always up to something.
Well, we believe it or not, we've got a new thing being established, a foundation that doesn't look just 5 years, Jarvis. We have a 1,000-year vision.
1,000, nice. Love it, yeah. Love it.
The 1,000-year vision is something that we are launching in the next couple of months. Probably we'll be launching it at Valleyfest, but it's called the Forever Farm Foundation, where we hope to link up many, many acres, millions of acres of land across the UK and Europe, which leaves this land in perpetuity for the future. A 1,000-year vision means that we want to steward it in a regenerative, organic or biodynamic way, or, you know, there's many different forms of stewardship. We are excited about having more and more land and more outreach across many, many areas of the world. So, and that's what we're working on right now.
I love it. I love it. So it's a 1,000-year plan. And you know what? It doesn't, I mean, it's ridiculous that we do think in kind of, you know, 5-year cycles, even saying that. And it's mainly linked to politics, isn't it? Because kind of every fourth or fifth year, there's a new, either a new government or a re-signing of the same government. And so we do think in these small kind of, you know, small time scales. So no, thank you for that. Thanks for reminding us of that. What can people expect in terms of music for the festival this year? Like, who have you got lined up?
Well, that'll be telling you before I go launching it all.
Okay, we're not allowed to do that.
Well, I might be able to sneak a few little gems out, but you know, mainly my own DJ profile, the Chemical Prodigy. but yeah, we've got some exciting things. We've got the Regenerator stage, which is musicians that are there to sing about the planet. We've got some exciting ones coming through the scenes there. We've got the main stage. A lot of what you've experienced in the past will be there. It's the main stage, the yard stage.
Yeah.
We've teamed up with a group in London called Save Our Scene, who are creating a new stage for us this season. And then we've got the house music area with a group called Retrospective of House. We've got some takeovers from another up-and-coming scene in Bristol called An Experience. And we have got Greenpeace doing a takeover, which is interesting. So that's all good. Good news without telling you exactly who's playing.
Yeah, no, that's fair. Sorry, I hadn't thought about the spoiler alert side of things, because of course festivals have to have this big announcement, don't they, of the lineup. So when's that coming? When are you gonna be kind of start to announce news?
The 30th of January. We're busy in the background developing all the assets now.
Great. Well, don't forget on being a part of that. We definitely want to come and do something on a day, so we'll chat about that. Luke, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on the show. Thank you very, very much for joining us. I know you've probably got to go out in the fields now and muck out the cows or whatever you have to do next. But greatly appreciate it. So anybody that's listening to Luke and hearing about Valley Fest, don't forget, go to valleyfest.co.uk, get your tickets now before they go up in price, because they normally do go up in price through different tiers. And it was a sellout last year, wasn't it, Luke?
Yeah, well, 2024, we had a fallow year, so we're
excited
to come back.
Yeah, great. So listen, thanks ever so much for joining us. We might get you on again a bit closer to the show so you can give us an update on the lineup.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Thank you, Jarvis. Thank you very much. Very grateful for having me on.
Not at all. It's been an absolute pleasure. So thanks to Luke. It's really great joining us. Do check out Valley Fest. It's going to be fabulous, I can assure you. I'm going to end the show, as I haven't done for a while, with that song that I made with Rita Mora. It's a song called Save the World, and we actually made it so we could raise money for Greta Thunberg and MAPA, which is the most affected people in areas. So every time this song's played, it raises some money and we send 100% of those royalties to the most affected people in areas, the young people around the world. So do get it onto your playlists. I'm going to play this out. It's been an absolute pleasure being back on the show for this new year, and I look forward to seeing you all next Monday. Have a super week. This is Save the World by yours truly, featuring Rita Mora.